I am Jake Mintz.
And I'm Jordan Schusterman. And on this Monday edition of Baseball Barbacast, we're talking about Zach Wheeler, who signed a massive extension with the Phillies, Matt Chapman, who signed a not quite as massive free agent contract with the Giants, and a grab bag of spring training goofiness.
Every day that goes by, you are one step closer to death, but also one step closer to opening day. So join us on Baseball Barbacast. It's going to be a great episode.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that will take $162 million to stay with our own team. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and I would take $125 million.
Yeah, no, we are not greedy. We are looking to stay comfortable, stay where we belong. And in the case of Zach Wheeler, that is apparently Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We are going to talk about the Zach Wheeler extension on this Monday edition of Baseball Barbacast. Matt Chapman finally signed with the Giants. We all knew it was going to happen at some point. He finally did that. And then the second half of the show, we got a grab bag of spring training goofiness. Because it's March, and that's kind of all we're talking about right now. So excited to get to all of that. But Jake, we do finally have some non-Dodgers and Giants news. I guess we still have some more Giants news to get to. But Zach Wheeler, you know a little bit something about Zach Wheeler. And I guess we should probably talk about him because he is a very, very... He already was a wealthy man. Now he is a wealthier man.
Yeah, he wasn't starting a GoFundMe. He didn't have to do that before today. But now he is even further away from GoFundMe territory. That is because the Phillies have extended him 3 years, $126 million. That will kick in after this season. So Wheeler was set to be a free agent at the end of 2024. In spring training, we had the requisite 2 weeks of, they got to get this done. And then people around the team being like, they're going to get this done. And they got it done. He will be with the Phillies through 2027.
So I think an obvious place to start here is the number, right? 3 years, $126 million. And if you said when he first signed with the Phillies, you know, going into the 2020 season, if you said that at some point he will sign a deal for more money than this for two fewer years, listen, if inflation aside, like, think about what that means. Think about what Zach Wheeler has become during his time in Philadelphia. Because it's not like Zach Wheeler was a nobody. I mean, he was a first-round pick. He was a top prospect. He's someone we did see have some success with the Mets. But what he has become with the Phillies is quite simply one of the best pitchers in baseball. I think, you know, we've had some, we probably will continue to have some discussions about this coming into the season, which is basically who is the second best pitcher in baseball. I think we agree, we are on the same page that Gerrit Cole would be our first pick. But besides that, like, it is an interesting discussion. I think Zach Wheeler has a case there. You've seen a lot of the Phillies over the last few years. What is so impressive about him, the pitcher?
I think it's the tension and the fastball command are the two things that separate him. Pitcher wins above replacement is a little wonky, but if you go to Fangraphs and you do pitcher war since the beginning of his contract, which is the start of the 2020 season, number one in baseball in value for pitchers. And it's by a pretty significant margin. Zach Wheeler, Corbin Burns, Gausman, Nola, Cole, Scherzer. He is, if not the second best pitcher in the world behind Gerrit Cole. You could argue he's the best pitcher in the world. That's something I'm sure people inside the Phillies clubhouse genuinely believe. you know?
Yeah.
And if you look at the numbers, it backs that up. The one thing that I would say maybe you could critique him for, the strikeouts are like a tick below over the last 4 years, like Burns, Gausman, Nola Cole. But he has bulk. Like, this is a guy who posts, he shows up, he works deep into games, especially in the postseason. He is constantly reinventing himself from a pitch mix, arsenal perspective, and spending time around him, he's a very smart, thoughtful guy when it comes to talking about pitching.
Yeah, and I think, again, their commitment at the start of this offseason to kind of go all in on Nola as that be their big offseason move, and then to kind of finish their offseason with making sure that Wheeler does not hit free agency is kind of just an extension of the theme that we've already been talking about with the Phillies that you talked about when you were there at camp, which is that they believe in the group that they have. And while, you know, maybe we get a last minute surprise here with them adding, you know, a Snell or Montgomery, I don't really see that. But they say, even with coming up short, you know, a couple years in a row here, they believe they have a championship core, and Wheeler is obviously such a massive part of that, particularly for their postseason success. And I think that has to factor in too. But again, you say, okay, is he the best pitcher in the world? Is he the third best pitcher in the world? The dude's going to be making $42 million over the next three seasons after this one, right? So this is an extension. So when you consider that, the fact that we're talking about his age 35, 36, and 37 seasons, that's a pretty serious commitment for a guy who has generally been healthy over his Phillies tenure, wasn't as much so before that, but he deserves it. And again, when you consider the risk associated with you know, giving any pitcher a lot of money, I totally understand this match.
This is lost in history because the Diamondbacks won, but Wheeler did the come out of the bullpen in game seven thing last year at home against Arizona in the two very embarrassing losses the Phillies had to the Diamondbacks. He came out of the bullpen in game seven in the seventh inning and got four outs and allowed just one base runner and didn't allow a run. And in the event that, like, the Phillies come back and win, we remember Zach Wheeler, badass, coming in out of the bullpen as a starter on, like, 3 days rest. And when, because they lost, we forget that, but he is in that territory, for me, of just absolute dominant hurlers we have in the sport.
Well, and here's the thing, though. So, like, we as a collective baseball fandom, postseason memories, we might forget that. That might be lost history. But the Phillies didn't forget that. Dave Dombrowski didn't forget that. And I'm confident that, you know, Phillies ownership did not forget him doing that. And that is probably, you know, a part of it too. It's not like, oh, if he didn't do that, they weren't going to extend him. No, but I do think that, like, that kind of performance and that kind of commitment and that those kind of showings in the postseason in particular makes them all the more excited to say, hey, yeah, this guy should continue to be at the front of our rotation for as long as possible. And yeah, it's someone that I'm sure a lot of teams were excited to try and get to sign with him, you know, next winter. And now he is clearly off the board. So good for
him. He's undeniably happy there. His wife, I believe, is from New Jersey, which played a role in him signing with the Phillies in the first place. Remember, the White Sox offered him significantly more that winter in free agency, and he chose to go to the Phillies. He then said, I was there for this, on the first day of spring training, he was asked about his contract status. And he said, more or less, like, they know I'll take less to be here. Now, with that in mind, let's look at the number of this contract. He will take less to be here. $42 million a year. I think that is less, because starting pitching,
3 years starting is pitching, less.
Yeah. 3 years is less. Like, he probably could have gotten a fourth year on the open market for a slightly lower AAV. But when you compare this number to what Scherzer and Verlander got recently in free agency, pitchers who were a few years older than him at the time, it lines up. Wheeler is at that level. And I'm not surprised that he got this amount. It is hilarious that he's making 42 and Harper's making 25 or whatever, right? I get that. But Zach Wheeler is great. And, like, no one in that room is going to be pissed off about that number.
No, obviously. And again, like, that's the theme of the Phillies, is they like what they have and they want to keep it going. So they're not going to. Now, I will say, though, as it relates to Bryce, we've talked about him, you know, saying he wants an extension. Now, and when he talked about it, he said, like, we got to get Zach Wheeler done first. Okay. So now that's done. And now we'll see if they can, you know, extend Bryce Harper through 2045 or whatever. But I do think that, again, when you look, and then you look at kind of the rest of their contracts, now everyone's there. I mean, Real Muto's under contract through 2025. I guess that's the next. Schwarber also through 2025. Castellanos through 2026. But obviously Turner's there forever. Harper's there forever. Nola's there forever. And then we'll see kind of, you know, this next core, obviously, with Stott and Marsh. Those guys are, you know, still pre-arb. So this is the team, man. This is the team.
Boehm is 2026 as well.
Boehm is 2026. So he's got three more years, including this one. So, but still, I mean, this is it. This is their group. This is who they're going to ride with. And we'll see. It'll be interesting whether it's, you know, over the next month or over the next year, trade deadline, whatever, you know, where they kind of fill in the holes, because otherwise this is their group and this is who they're going to go with. And you can understand why. You can understand why. It is a pretty solid group.
Also, one last thing on Wheeler. First ballot bald baseball guy.
Oh, yeah. So bald. So bald. And, you know, he's a guy, he's good. You know, you wear hats in this sport, so it's not that big of a deal. But it just make sure you're ready. Just make sure you're ready. I guess I'm curious about this because presumably we will have a Zach Wheeler press conference here at some point soon, probably down in Clearwater. Will he be wearing, I've noticed some of the spring training press conferences have been a little bit more lax, like the Bellinger one. He was just like wearing a hoodie. It's not like,
well, he's got to go lift.
Oh, I know. Like normally when you do these in December, you know, everyone's all dressed up. Hopefully Zach Wheeler will be able to just, you know, keep his hat on. Yeah. But no, he's bald and proud, which is great.
No, but yeah, that's the thing. He's not a keep his hat on guy. No, you know, no. Like Zach Wheeler been anything. Bald. He's been bald for a long time, and I respect his, like, he's doing a lot for the bald baseball community, and it's important to recognize that. So congratulations to Zach Wheeler. Do not spend any of this new money on hair plugs, please.
No, I don't think he will. But again, I do think that especially, you know, you look at the guys who have been paid the most this offseason. Ohtani. Amazing hair. Yamamoto has got some nice hair. Glasnow, outstanding hair. Yeah. Aaron Nola, different category. A lot of hair. It's not quite as luscious as I think.
Very
Glasnow. Very wet. Hater. He's gotten paid. I mean, think about it. Jung-Hoo Lee, when his helmet's coming off. I mean, it's really some exceptional stuff. And so I think Wheeler is really kind of setting the tone, you know, for the bald market, which I really appreciate.
Market.
Gurriel Jr. I mean, talk about that's as good as it gets. Okay, anyway, all right. That's I was not anticipating going in that direction, but we talk about Zach Wheeler really bald, and that's where it goes. Okay, let's move to another move, Jake, for a guy with unremarkable hair in either direction, and that's Matt Chapman. Matt Chapman is now on the San Francisco Giants. That sentence by itself is not especially shocking when you consider this was a spot in free agency, a match at the beginning of the offseason. We said that could make some sense. He's homies with Bob Melvin. They remember their times in Oakland, and now they can reunite in San Francisco. We know the Giants want to spend money, but this deal, we talk about, oh man, they shelled out big time for Zach. This deal, 3 years, $54 million. The Giants hilariously announcing it as a one-year, $18 million deal, which I guess is technically true, as Matt Chapman will have opt-outs after the first 2 years of the deal. This is essentially the same deal that Cody Bellinger got, except $26 million fewer dollars. This is, I have to say, a massive dub for the San Francisco Giants. We're going to get into Matt Chapman, the player here, but strictly starting with the numbers, and we've talked about, okay, Scott Boras, is he losing his fastball? Is he going to really be able to get all these guys super-duper paid? I still think Snell will be the ultimate barometer, but this is a very, very interesting deal and an incredible win as far as a staring contest goes for the Giants with Matt Chapman in the same way that the Cubs kind of won with Cody Bellinger.
I saw a tweet about this. Like, did Boras really wait this out to get Matt Chapman Michael Wacha money? Because that's what this is. 3 years at 18 a year. I mean, I guess, right, you're getting the ops so you can go and get paid again next year if you want. But, like, Stroman got 218 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is not what Matt Chapman was expecting.
No.
This is not what Scott Boras was probably telling Matt Chapman was going to happen.
No.
And in talking to people around the game about Boras and this offseason, you get some interesting stuff, okay? And I think the biggest one is that Boras's tact of waiting out the market only works when you have the big bosses. So like when he did this with Harper, Harper was going to get his money because he's Harper. But it's much harder to pull this off when you have players that are not as no duh as Bryce Harper. And as much as I like Matt Chapman, and I'm going to talk about why I think Matt Chapman is underrated here in a second, you are not going to wait teams out. And what I think we've seen with Bellinger and Chapman, and what we will eventually see with Snell, more than Montgomery, in my opinion, is Boras misunderstanding the market this year. I think that's the only way you can swing it. He's going to spin it a different direction when he sits down at the press conference, obviously. But I'm skeptical. There's no way that he's happy.
Yeah,
about this.
Yeah. I don't know if it's like this is. I mean, clearly it's not a win, right? So this isn't about that. I will say that yeah, what it is when you're not talking about someone of Bryce Harper's caliber or the top of the market is. And I wrote a little bit about this today. This will be up at Yahoo, I believe, later on Monday, just about the Giants offseason in general. This, for players like Matt Chapman and Cody Bellinger, who come with red flags, and we're going to see how this impacts the pitchers. But really what it is when free agency drags this long is, do the teams need the players more than the players need them? And that is really the waiting game that we really say. And essentially what ended up happening is, Matt Chapman and Cody Bellinger decided they needed teams more than the teams needed them. Now, pitching is more complicated than that because with the injuries and with the number of innings that every good team has to cover, you could argue that, and I'm sure Boras still feels that pitchers or teams will decide we actually do need Blake Snell more than Blake Snell needs us. And I think, or Jordan Montgomery, a guy who is, you know, maybe supplying even more certain level of performance and bulk. But I think for the position players, particularly when we kind of realized how small the list of suitors were for these players. Now, I understand we're going to get to why this is still an incredible deal because I think Matt Chapman's really good and I think Cody Bellinger's really good and these are incredible deals for the teams. And I understand why players are frustrated with the way that teams are treating them in this sense and that the market has gotten to this point. But it is that's the dynamic that's at play because teams can just say, you know what, like, we don't need this guy. We don't. And unfortunately, with camps already starting, and once you've already seen your team and you've already started to settle and you say, I like these young players. I like this depth chart. I like what we have. We don't need this. We don't need this. We don't need this. Yes, they're going to find teams eventually, but that's really the dynamic that we're talking about.
It's very uncomfortable. And, you know, there were conversations about setting a deadline for free agency, and that's a bad idea for a million reasons. But I do think it is true. If the reigning Cy Young is not signed on March 4th, that is a problem. That is bad. That is a bad look for the sport and shows that the system is broken and wonky and something is amiss. I don't want to get into the specifics of that. We've talked about that a bunch. But like, you're right that we reached a point here where I bet Matt Chapman's like, you know what? Yeah, maybe I could wait another 2 weeks and get another $2 million. But like, I got to get to camp.
I need to play on. I hope to be playing on opening day somewhere, and I need to do this. Yeah. And obviously, presumably, he had some kind of offer at some point, and they've been going back and forth. And so he, I think this is a good place for him.
Now, two things here. Mm-hmm. Boras, right, is very anti-extension. Mm-hmm. Okay, there were two extension offers to Matt Chapman reported that he turned down. Mm-hmm. One was with Oakland. That I believe was in the $150 million range. Mm-hmm. And one was with Toronto that was in the $100 million range. Okay. Mm-hmm. He gets less than that here.
Yeah.
And so I understand why agents don't always love an extension and it's good to test the open market. But this is an example of where a guy probably should have taken the extension.
But it's also a matter of, and when you think about how Boras will think about this, this is where the opt-outs always come into play, because basically they're saying, okay, this market was weird. Let's just punt and hopefully have a good season and try again next year. That's the easiest way to do it. And that's obviously what they're hoping for. But I still agree with you, right? Like when you have that kind of security offered somewhere, then yeah, it's easy to look back and be like, yeah, should have taken that. It clearly cost you some amount of money. But let's talk about Matt Chapman, the player. Okay, let's move the financials aside. Let's talk about Matt Chapman is now on the Giants. So first thing is, okay, well, what do you mean Matt Chapman? Like, the Giants did have a pretty good third baseman in J.D. Davis, who I think is underrated too. I am curious how they choose to use him, but let's just focus on Matt Chapman. They are clearly bringing him in to be the everyday third baseman, I assume, unless this is a 50,000 IQ Matt Chapman plays shortstop. I don't think that's going to happen.
They already said that's not happening.
Great. Okay, so Matt Chapman is the third baseman. We'll see what happens with J.D. Davis. I like J.D. Davis, but let's talk about Matt Chapman. Why was Matt Chapman a problematic free agent as far as a long-term investment goes? Because as we continue the comparison with Cody Bellinger, the concerns with Cody Bellinger were, what is this guy as a hitter, right? What are we getting? It was impressive that he reinvented himself, but oh my gosh, the exit velocities are so down. Like, whoa, he's changed all the time. He's constantly tinkering, blah, 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 blah.
Can we trust this?
But with Bellinger, there was, you know, also a floor of defensive, you know, aptitude where he has this interesting first base center field combination, and he's a good defender and, you know, good base runner and all these things, right? Matt Chapman has the baseline of one of the best third base defenders we have seen of his generation, right? Maybe he is not the best anymore, the way that he arguably was for a little stretch of time. Maybe he is now merely a top five third base defender instead of clearly number one or two. However, that is a very valuable thing. But the way that you talk about Matt Chapman, the way that people talk about Matt Chapman, the hitter, because of how absurd his 2023 was, paints the picture of someone whose OPS plus has fluctuated from like 120 to 70 every season. Whereas, guess what? He's never had an OPS plus under 100 in any of his seasons as a major league player. So let's talk about what happened last year, because it truly was one of the streakiest seasons we've ever seen from anybody. This guy had his best month of his career in April, and then three of like his five worst months of his careers over the span of the rest of the season. It was so weird and so strange and so difficult to explain, because I remember writing about Matt Chapman at the end of April and being like, oh my God, like not only is the performance level through the roof, he's made these tweaks, he's made these shifts to up the contact, to hit the ball to right center field, and it's all coming together, and all that underlying data, which is that this dude hits the ball really hard, it's all happening for him. And then my God, did it just disappear over the course of the season.
So hard hit percentage tracks the percentage of balls you hit over 95 miles an hour, okay?
Exit
velocity, not fastballs over 95. Yes. Now, this stat is important, and I hope I don't have to explain this, but hard to hit the ball, generally, that's a good thing, okay? It's harder to catch. It goes further. Those are both important. Matt Chapman hit the ball harder last year, more than every single human being in baseball except for Aaron Judge. He was second in the league in hard hit percentage. Okay, that's unbelievable. Now, just hitting the ball hard is not going to single-handedly turn you into Aaron Judge. There are a lot of other parts of his batted ball profile that are not ideal. The most notable for me, Jordan, is that he hits the ball to center field a whole lot. I went through and watched a bunch of his videos. Like, I essentially looked at balls he hit over 95 that were outs. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it's so many flyouts to deep center field. Mm-hmm. Pulling the ball gives you a higher percentage of hitting it over the fence, okay? Because it is shorter to that part of the park. And so just because he's hitting the ball hard, if he's hitting it to center, it's not particularly helpful. Okay, so that's one thing. It is very bizarre. And you look at the hard hit percentage. Okay, here's the top five. Judge, Matt Chapman, Matt Olson, who hit, 50,000 home
54,
runs?
54, yep. Mm-hmm.
Juan Soto, who you're familiar with, and then NL MVP Ronald Acuna Jr. And so Matt Chapman is doing the most difficult task, I would say, elite. He is elite at hitting the ball hard. Now, why not as good as other guys? Why is he not as good as Ronald Acuna? That is because, like I said, he hits it to the bad part of the park, hits it on the ground a little bit too much, pops it up a little bit too much, and he strikes out a whole lot.
Yes, but the strikeouts are, while they've always been an issue, it's whiff more than reckless approach. Because what Matt Chapman is also very good at generally is not chasing. He's been 94th percentile or above in chase rate the last few seasons. And so the point that we're getting at is the basis for an offensive player here is still really, really, really strong. When you combine that with the fact that the raw power is the kind that if you dial it in just a little bit more, a little bit more consistently, should still play in San Francisco the way that I think Jorge Soler's will as well. That is the kind of player that I can understand betting on. Now, when Farhan Zaidi talked about this afterwards, he, of course, said we target him because he is an amazing defender. And we have guys like Logan Webb who are going to put the ball to the ground a lot. And like we are trying to build a strong defense, by the way, especially if their shortstop is Marco Luciano, who ends up is going to have a lot of question marks. We'll see if he ends up winning that job. Maybe they go with Casey Schmidt, who is just totally glove first, and they have an incredible, you know, left side of the infield defensively. But I do think that there's just enough here that for $18 million for 3 years and 54, this is a no-brainer. This is an absolute easy win. This is a deal that I think the Blue Jays would have loved to have him back, that the Mariners would have been way better off giving him this contract than rolling with the platoon that they have. There are all kinds of teams that this for third base. I understand that the bad version of Matt Chapman is pretty frustrating to watch, but the baseline is still really, really, really solid, and I really like this a lot for them.
And he posts. Like, yeah, Matt Chapman plays, dude. Like, okay, take out 2020, 2020 stupid. Games per year. 154, 156, 151, 155, 140. He shows up and he plays every day. And like, I think that is a very underrated component of a winning ball club, especially for a team like San Francisco. Okay, so like the Braves or the Phillies or a team that is like very sure it's going to be in October can kind of craft its roster in a certain way to make sure that the best, you know, 15 players in the team are really good. But for a team like the Giants, where it needs to suck value out of every nook and cranny in order to compete with the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks in that division and the Padres in that division, a guy like Matt Chapman, who's going to play every day and be a 3.5-4 run player, like that's really, really valuable. So love this move for the Giants. Hate this move for Matt Chapman's pocketbook. Like this move for Matt Chapman, like the guy. Mm-hmm. I do think he will like playing in San Francisco and being on that team.
Yeah, he's a California guy. I mean, I think California it'll guy. Be
so
it'll
Cal be guy.
Yeah, not that he didn't fit with Toronto, but that's the other thing, right? It's possible that he was just wanted to test the market anyway and find somewhere else to play. And I think I don't know. This doesn't seem that complicated. Now, listen, bigger picture, is this enough to be a division contender or a wildcard contender? I think let's wait and see how the Giants, I mean, I wrote about that today, but let's wait and see how the rest of their offseason shakes out. But I think this is a really nice, another move. And when you compare it to last offseason with just all of the mid that they targeted,
yeah,
Soler, Chapman, Lee are like three everyday players that like the best versions of those guys are very much elevating, not just your watchability, but your ceiling as an overall offense.
And once they get Ohtani next winter, I mean, that lineup's going to be absolutely unbelievable. All right, let's take a quick break. And when we return, we will pop open the grab bag of goofy topics and talk about why the new Orioles owner is a man of the people. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. If you know anything about the Bible, you know that King David was a man of the people, Jordan. And that is the case in Baltimore. Orioles' new owner, David Rubenstein, not quite finalized, but we're getting there. David Rubenstein showed up to Orioles spring training over the weekend, sat in the box with old owner John Angelos. But most importantly, this is from a tweet from friend of the show, Andy Koska at the Baltimore Banner. David Rubenstein just walked through the concourse at the Orioles spring training stadium, waving to fans, kissing babies, looking like an absolute normie. Now, I know this is catnip for someone who cares about the Baltimore Orioles, but Jordan, how excited should I be that the owner is in the crowd?
Well, let's move, you know, the specific reference that you're making aside. This is something that is a good reminder, because we've seen this already with other owners who have gotten a lot of credibility and popularity within their fan base, which is just like, just be around. I mean, Peter Seidler, rest in peace. Like, one of the reasons why, of course, it helps that he, you know, put hundreds of millions of dollars into the team. Dude was around. Dude was just hanging out at the ballpark, shaking hands. He was a Padres fan, right? He wanted to go sit. We've seen this with Middleton, too, occasionally with Philadelphia, right? Like, and Steve Cohen, now that's a different level of relatability because he's one of the richest people on earth. But, like, it doesn't take a lot to, you know, make the fan base feel like you are a part of them. And this is just a great example of that, especially, by the way, when you're doing it, you know, at a spring training game, which is, you know, a little bit lower stakes, maybe a little bit less interesting, but also cool.
Well, I was going to say, so a couple of things. Number one is I can't imagine too many people recognized him.
Probably not.
I would say
not,
some probably did, yet. But not too many.
Next year. Dudes, when he does next this next year. Oh, boy. Yeah.
My guy is in sneaks. I mean, I think he's rocking kit. He's got kicks on. He's not overdressed. It is spring training. He knows it's a casual endeavor. And can you imagine, like, he's up in the booth or in the box with Angelos, and Rubenstein's like, I think I'm going to go walk around. Angelos is like, you're going to what? Yeah, I'm just going to walk around. Do you want security?
Exactly.
No, exactly. My wife and I are just going to walk around, I guess.
Just taking in a day at, what is it, Ed Smith Stadium.
Last thing about this, Jordan. Someone mentioned this on Twitter. Dude looks like a taller Steve Martin.
Yeah, I kind of see that. It's not a terrible comp. Was this yesterday or was this on Saturday?
This is on Saturday. On Saturday.
Okay, yeah. But yeah, so good for him. But like I said, again, the bar is eventually in this specific situation, the bar is quite low. But we are excited for him and for you.
And he doesn't stand out too much. David Rubenstein in Sarasota?
Yeah, there's no way he's the only one out there. So
he's one of eight David Rubensteins at the park that day. All right, let's continue through our grab bag of topics.
Let's actually stick with owners here. I want to talk about a tweet from Steve Cohen. Okay, I just mentioned Steve Cohen earlier. Again, of course, we've gotten very used to the Steve Cohen era. It's been a dramatic one. That's certainly one way to put it. But one thing we know about Steve Cohen, and I'm curious how you know Rubenstein's going to fit into this, is Steve Cohen likes to tweet, right? And we had a bit of, I guess, news. I don't know if this was like supposed to be how this was a thing, but there was a woman that posted something on Instagram. It seems like somebody named Emily Thomas posted on Instagram a picture of her next to a Mets logo, saying that she was excited to announce she's going to be part of the first ever New York Mets dance team. Okay, so this is like,
we're going to get the invite.
We were not. I couldn't even audition. I'm really disappointed. So this seems
here.
To be. I know you're at City Field all the time. Well, why couldn't you once you're done, you know, doing clubhouse, you know, throw on the uniform and get the crowd hype? So you know whether or not this was how the news that the Mets were getting a dance team was supposed to come out. Okay, whatever. That doesn't really matter. So this is very, very nice news. And somebody quote tweeted this. And said, this is from somebody named Charlotte on Twitter, who appears to be a Yankees fan, appropriately. Charlotte said, this is baseball. This isn't the NBA or NFL. There's not halftime in this game. I don't see how a dance team is necessary. Now, again, this is where Steve Cohen really shines, okay? Because Steve Cohen, one of the 100 richest people on earth, he was not tagged in this. He was not tagged in the original post. He was not tagged by this random Yankees fan. But Steve Cohen hops in the replies and says, excellent point. I forgot how serious baseball is relative to other sports. Okay. So here we have Steve Cohen with some $14 billion sarcasm. Okay. Being like, oh, look at you taking baseball so seriously. Why can't, you know, we have some fun with the dance team? To which I say, one, LOL, Steve Cohen, just reply guy, weirdo, is great. But let's have a dance team. I love it. Why not? Who cares if it's going to have more people? Now, does that not, I mean, we can still make some jokes about, and as Mets fans themselves have already been like being like, when Drew Smith comes in down by 10, when we're 15 games out of the playoffs and the Mets team, the dance team's trying to hype us up. Yeah, like that's funny. And like, we will make those jokes too. But guess what? Steve Cohen's talked a lot about, you know, trying to make the Citi Field experience more lively and more exciting. This could be one way to do it. Maybe it'll work. Maybe it won't. I don't care. It's something different in a baseball game. I support that.
They struck gold with Timmy Trumpet. Okay. The Yankees could never. Enter Sandman, but come on. Like,
No. They would never.
If I'm the Mets, I'm going anti-Yankees at every single turn. Mm-hmm. The historical grandioseness of Yankeedom is it a thing that sells tickets and puts butts in seats and works because there are 27 rings. Okay? That's a fact. Mm-hmm. However, the Mets don't have that. And so the Mets should lean in the complete opposite direction. Okay? I want not just dancers. I want acrobats. I want going to Citi Field to be Cirque du Soleil with bases. Okay?
Yeah. And again, like, my real opinion on this is I don't think people are actually, if this is indeed happening, I don't think people will actually notice it as much as they think, unless they're going out in center field between innings, which I don't think is possible.
Oh my God, that'd be great. Because you know what? That's so funny. Like Brandon Nimmo, who's like the least dance team energy ever, is like warming up next to, that's so good.
Yeah, but again, I think that it's not like, there are baseball teams that have, you know, hype squad. You know, we had this. It's not that different, right? They're going to throw t-shirts, the same thing. Now,
I got a prediction. Can I make a prediction?
Please.
If the dance team does perform in center field, one of the members will go on a date with Harrison Bader.
Oh, I don't even know if it's going to require going. Yeah, anyway, okay, interesting. Now, again, I know there's probably some rules and regulations regarding relationships of the kind, but it's not a bad thought. It's not a bad thought. I will say though, like, listen, if we're trying to replicate it, I'm sure there's parts of, this is a good example of people see baseball in other countries, whether it's played in, you know, the DR or in Taiwan, and you see the kinds of atmospheres that exist that often include a lot of team specific people who are in, whether it's a dance team, whether it's cheerleaders, whether it's just like regular hype squads. That is an environment that I know a lot of baseball fans and probably owners think like, yeah, it'd be cool if we could replicate that. Can you actually replicate that in America? I'm skeptical, but I don't blame them for trying.
I think you can replicate it in certain sections if you find a way to condense people who want to help create that atmosphere. If you get them together in one spot, I think you can. Mm-hmm. We've seen that with, like, you know, the Seven Line. We've seen that with the King's Court. Like, you can foster that, but you have to be very intentional about it. But anyway, good job to the Mets. More teams should have dance teams. Yes. Let's move on to Drake LaRoche. Jordan, I'm going to kick the rock to you. I'm going to blow my nose and mute my mic and let you talk about Drake LaRoche.
All right. So Drake LaRoche, who, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably recall one of the stars of one of the greatest spring training stories that we've had probably since we've been doing this over the last 10 years. The short version is basically Drake LaRoche, son of Adam LaRoche, who was, of course, a longtime first baseman. Drake LaRoche, like many big league children, as we've seen some of them, you know, grow up to become Jackson Holliday, spends a lot of time in the clubhouse, spends a lot of time around the team that his dad is playing for. And in 2016, the White Sox essentially told Adam LaRoche after his first year in Chicago, where Drake LaRoche was around all the time, in 2016 spring training, there was a disagreement over how much Drake LaRoche should be around the clubhouse. And essentially, Adam LaRoche retired on the spot out of principle and completely gave up what would have been, I think, $16 million because the team wouldn't let him have Drake LaRoche around. Now, if the tone that I'm telling this is making it sound like Adam LaRoche was being ridiculous, you should know that all of his teammates were entirely on his side. Drake LaRoche was not a problem the entire season before, but the White Sox decided now he was, because they were going to take that 2016 season so seriously that obviously did not actually lead anywhere. And so what happened was, Adam LaRoche retired on the spot. The White Sox clubhouse was in shambles. We had unbelievable quotes from Adam Eaton being like, we lost a leader in Drake. Again, we're talking about a 14-year-old child.
Which is also, by the way, amazing because Adam retired.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah.
We lost the leader in Drake, but Adam.
It was kind of both of them, right? So that was the end of Adam LaRoche's career. Chris Sale was also like a very big part of this, where he was extremely pissed. Okay, blah, blah, blah. Fast forward, it's 2024. Drake LaRoche is now a college pitcher at Birmingham Southern College, one of the best Division III baseball programs in America. He's been pitching in junior college the last couple seasons. And I knew that because our good friend Dan Hayes wrote a story about this whole thing, reflecting on it back in 2021. And we actually had him on the podcast to talk about that. But when I was scrolling on the Birmingham Southern roster and I saw this name, I have never quadruple-taked harder. Because I was just like, again, Drake LaRoche was, I knew he didn't pitch super well in junior college. And I was like, all right, well, that was fun. We'll never hear from him again. But no, it's he's back. And he struck out 11 against Sewanee over the weekend. And that doesn't mean anything to anybody. But the point is, if Drake LaRoche is a D3 All-American, that would probably be the most cesspitous barbecue news headline you could possibly ever create. It feels like this story is like scientifically engineered to entertain us specifically.
But I would say the most important component is that Drake LaRoche has a kid. And how much is Drake LaRoche's kid allowed around the Birmingham Southern program?
Well,
is just a hilarious question to ask.
That's that. And then people have, of course, pointed out, like, the White Sox double A affiliate is in Birmingham. You know, are we going to have, you know, the White Sox, like, oh my God, the White Sox have to draft him. Listen, it's hard to get drafted out of D3 now with only 20 rounds of the draft. He'd have to put up some pretty crazy numbers. And we are talking about a 5'9" right-handed pitcher who's probably not throwing very hard. But Drake LaRoche is back in our lives, and that's really all that matters. And we're rooting for him. Let's be very clear. We are rooting for this kid.
And obviously a great clubhouse guy.
They got a leader. They got a leader, okay? If you're talking about big transfer portal additions. So good luck to the Panthers this season. And Drake, the ace. All right, Jake, speaking of aces, let's talk about Sixto Sanchez. Sixto Sanchez is back on the mound.
Come on.
I mean, last time I saw him in the big leagues, he was one of the best pitchers in baseball. Now, was that 4 years ago? Yeah, okay, it was. But if Sixto Sanchez throws a pitch in the major leagues this year, I will be overjoyed. I will be overjoyed. Now, unfortunately, he is on a team with just an absolute overflowing amount of pitching depth. So it's going to be tough for Sixto to kind of break through. But I'm rooting for it. He was throwing 95 the other day. I didn't think he was throwing like 85 at the end of the season last year. So I'm feeling great about Sixto as far as things are concerned.
He is throwing harder. I have to, maybe I'm going to be Deborah Downer, but he doesn't look good.
I mean, it's not like he was an Adonis when he was pitching in 2020.
I understand, but I get uncomfortable talking about like player physiques sometimes. Mm-hmm. But this is a sport, right? Like, it is an athletic endeavor. And Sixto Sanchez, at times over the last couple of years, one, has not always looked the most in shape. And two, we have gotten public reports that he is not always the most committed.
Here's the thing. That's a Marlins problem, not my problem.
I understand. I am still rooting for the guy to just be this and dominate as a big leaguer. That would be awesome. That being said, somebody put him in the bullpen, please. Enough. He's not starting.
Well, I imagine they are. Yeah. I don't know exactly what the Marlins' plans are if they're trying to build him back up as a starter. I mean, I'm rooting for him. It's not like I wanted his career to be over. However, I feel like we mentioned this all the time. Had Sixto actually disappeared, it would be on like Hall of Fame baseball reference page. There's still a chance that he, you know, doesn't actually pitch in the big leagues anymore and sustains. But to have your only season be 2020, that already is a very small group of people. Right. But to have your only season be 2020 and your only season be 2020 and you're one of the best pitchers in the league in 2020, special stuff.
You said he's never looked like an Adonis. Can I just make an edit and a preposition here? When talking about that word in a baseball context, I think we should say he's never looked like an Adolis.
Oh, an Adolis.
As in Adolis Garcia.
I thought you were going to be like Adonis Medina is not a particularly impressive looking guy. That's a great point. I do think if we can adjust that because, Adolis, that's what we're talking about. That is
Adolis is in Adonis.
Yes. Yes. So that is a great point. That is a great edit. I totally agree with that. So I'm rooting for six, though. And I do hope he pitches in some capacity again. Obviously.
Another man on the comeback trail, Brendan McKay, who at one point was like This was the thing that Jordan and I wrote. Okay. We have been wrong. When Ohtani got signed and Brendan McKay was in the minors, we were like, Shohei Ohtani is not the only two-way superstar about to take over the league. McKay was the Golden Spikes winner, the best player in college baseball. He was a first-round talent as a pitcher and hitter. He hit and pitched in the big leagues. He did do that. I believe he had a home run as a DH, and he started games. He was doing both. And then his shoulder said, nah. And then his elbow said, definitely not. And he has been very much injured for the last number of seasons. He is now back pitching in spring training. He's 90-91. Doesn't look like the same kind of guy. But the fact that he is throwing baseballs off the mound makes me happy. I'm happy for Brendan McKay.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess I'd bet on the Rays finding a way to make him like an effective loogie, even if he is throwing 90 miles an hour. I would not put it past them.
One more uniform update. Okay. This is from not friend of the show, Michael Rubin, who is the CEO of Fanatics, who manufactures MLB's lovely new uniforms. Michael Rubin said, quote, a difficult position for us. We're doing everything as we've been told, and we're getting the shit kicked out of us. So that's not fun. What make of this you, Jordan?
Well, I actually want to read the extended quote. This is, he was speaking at the MIT Sloan Analytics Conference. The Sloan Analytics Concert. Very different than the Sloan Analytics Conference.
Now
I think I might have just come up with something. I mean, you want to get a little more hype? You want to get a little bit more energy into the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference? Make it a concert. Anyway. Your quote, I mean, the quote that you just read is amazing, for sure. And that's the graphic that we will all be using forever. But I take more out of the extension of the quote where he said, time will tell, but I believe Nike will be proved right about the uniforms being an improvement. And he continued, biggest thing I probably learned is if we're involved in something, we need to make sure that everybody better be on board. They got certain players on board, not all players on board. To which I say,
you know the players who they got on board? Do you want to know who got on board?
Yeah, who?
All of the guys repped by Nike.
I know, exactly. So people pointed that out when we started getting all these quotes from, you know, guys like Nolan Arenado being like, this has changed my life. And again, like, okay, sure. Obviously, the premise of this, remember from the beginning, is that they were clearly more focused on it being, quote unquote, performance wear. But it is funny because clearly what people care about, including the players, is that it looks good. And so that's where, like, it better be really good performance where you better really be enjoying it if it's going to look that crappy. And so far, it is not outweighing it. So maybe they will be proven right. But as for now, I think we're just going to continue to laugh at them.
When he says we're doing everything we've been told, I think he means MLB and Nike said, here's the material. Here's your budget. Make us uniforms. Right. And I don't want to make Michael Rubin the victim here, but I do think he is right. It was a difficult position for him. However, he developed a reputation and earned reputation as someone who could make cheap sports schmatas. Okay? That's his thing. And so for him to be like, me having to do this? It's like, my guy, you're not a chef. Like, you're not an accountant. They came to you with a thing that you have done and you've been known to do, and you did it, and nothing would have happened if people had just shut up. Like, you made a bad product, okay? The people who want and use the product said you did a bad job. If they hadn't said that, you would have kept your mouth shut and you never would have thought about this two times.
One final topic, Jake, before we say goodbye. Robinson Cano is still playing baseball. I am wearing my Mexican League Pericos de Puebla hat that you got me, I believe, when you were in Mexico a few years back. And I'm wearing this because Robinson Cano will be playing in the Mexican League this upcoming summer. And the reason why I just wanted to mention this quickly is because it is a humble reminder that even the guys whose careers, major league careers, are clearly, you know, long, long, long gone, whether it is playing every game in the Dominican Winter League, whether it is going to Dubai as part of the Baseball United event, Robinson Cano clearly just loves ball and wants to just keep playing ball. No matter what his batting average is in whatever league he's playing in, he wants to keep playing, and he will continue this year playing for the Diablos Rojos in the Mexican League, who I believe are playing against the Yankees as in an exhibition series before opening day, because the Yankees are opening in Houston. And so I believe they're going down to Mexico to play a couple games before that. And I hope Robinson Cano is batting third, because he's Robinson Cano and he probably will get to. And honestly, if you talk about the Mexican League, which is basically the most offensive league we have in organized baseball right now, he will probably still find him.
That league is 21 win by two.
Yeah. he will probably still have like a 900 OPS, even though he is turning four. He's okay. Robinson Cano is 41 already. That kind of took me by surprise, even knowing how long he has been hanging on. But Robbie, listen, Robbie's made some mistakes in his career, obviously. It's kind of a shame. There are parts of the end of his career is kind of sad on many respects, but I still love watching this guy swing the bat. I don't care how much bat speed he's lost. He is still so much fun to watch. So I hope he hits a homer against Gerrit Cole, who will probably not be pitching in those Mexican series games.
Jordan ripping out the baseball equivalent of I still listen to old Kanye albums.
I do. I can listen, man. He was an absolute baller on the Mariners. And even though it never went anywhere, he was very fun. So still love you, Robbie. I hope you enjoy hitting home runs in Mexico. All right, Jake, that's it. We did it. We did a podcast. This has been Baseball Barbacast. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. That's BARBcast. We'll be back on Wednesday.
Emails, yeah. Got some great emails about how many people knew about Ohtani. So thank you for sending those.
Yes, yes. And maybe we will do a more formal mailbag, but keep those coming. We'll try to respond to some of those as well, even if we don't read them on the show. But thank you to Brett Rader for producing. Thank you to everyone who listened. If you enjoyed it, leave us a rating, review, wherever you listen to your podcast. Tell people that our show doesn't suck, because we're doing our best here. We hope you've enjoyed it.
Or tell them that it does. Or tell them that it does. You got to hate listening to this thing.
That's fine, too. And then, obviously, the YouTube comments. We've been enjoying those as well. So if you're watching on YouTube, we appreciate you supporting us over there. But otherwise, thank you all for listening or watching. And we will talk to you all on Wednesday. Goodbye.